हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So the Lord helps the jiva to attain liberation. He is worshipable not only as the impersonal Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the localized Paramatma, but as the form of the incarnation of the Vedas as well. The Vedas give the right direction to people so they can properly mold their lives and come back to Godhead, back to home. The Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and Krishna in his incarnation as Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. The commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Vyas in the Srimad Bhagavatam gives the real understanding of Vedanta Sutra. The Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is the supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activities, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas and as the Personality of Godhead. Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita. He is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good, God is all merciful. So, is that he supplies and digests the foodstuffs, right? So he has the energy and all that. He is the witness of his activity, so he gives that. He gives them the knowledge of the Vedas so they can attain the Personality of Godhead. So the whole thing is very complete, right? So it's just a matter of we have a tendency to see it in so many different ways, is that there's the world, and then there's within that there's the Vedic literatures and the Vedic lifestyle. But actually, there's only the Vedas and the Vedic lifestyle. Right? God is everything in that. It's just a matter of waking to that. That's why we sang, you know, about waking up. Right? It's just a matter, it's the way it is. We take it that there's this and something else. But it's not. There's only God. That's all there is. That's why Prabhupada then always just brings it back to that point. Right? It's not that he's just saying the same thing over and over again. No, he's bringing just out the reality of what it is. All the other things are details. But those details, how they work and mechanically and all that, that's described in other literatures. But even that is for the purpose of understanding the Personality of Godhead. So therefore, in his commentaries, that'll be the main focus. Because by studying the literature itself, then one will get the practical knowledge that it gives, you know, for use. But to be able to understand the Personality of Godhead behind it, that's the difficulty. Yes.
Maharaj, I'm wondering, sometimes devotees say to live a Vedic lifestyle is difficult or is impossible. Why do devotees
Because they're thinking the Vedic lifestyle is simply the form and activity rather than the Vedic lifestyle is to remember God. See, the point is that they're looking at the rules. Why are the rules there? You know, with our discussion over the last few days. Why are there rules?
Because Krishna made rules?
Yes, I mean, he made rules. What rules is he making?
So that we can remember him.
Yeah, in other words, the rules by which you can remember him. Now, if we only see the rule itself and don't remember him, it's pious, but it's not exactly what the point was. You know, so then we can say, well, it's more important than the rules is the Krishna consciousness. But the point is that the rules ensure that there's a regularity of Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Just like we say, we go to the temple program, you know, or we have a schedule. Then it's sure that every day you're going to do it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like if there wasn't a morning program, would we chant always at that time, or do Tulsi Puja, or, you know, remember the Sringadev, or, you know what I'm saying? So these are the elements so that all things that are important are then remembered, right? But the Vedic lifestyle style simply means that you're remembering Krishna all the time. That's all. Does that make sense? But they take it that, oh, you know, you gotta wash your hands, and you gotta do this, and you gotta do that. But the point is why do we wash our hands? Why would we wash our hands after eating? I mean, you know, jeans are there, you know, so what else do you need? Right? Napkins and jeans, right? It means you lick your fingers off, you dry them, and if there's anything else, you just polish it on your jeans. You know? Especially the back, it's always the best. You know, hand is slightly curved, the back's slightly curved. You know, it works really good. You know what I'm saying? So, why? Why wash hands?
Krishna likes it clean.
Yeah, because he's the supreme pure, so anything connected is pure. So it's just to ensure that you're on a level of purity that will make it easy for you to remember Krishna. That's one thing. The other thing is mechanically, the mode of goodness is enlightening, so that's that cleanliness is part of that. Opassion, ignorance, then it has the unclean element. Right? So then the tendency of unclean is to go into passion or ignorance. Not that you couldn't remember Krishna. It's just the tendency of being conditioned. We're influenced very strongly by our environment. So therefore, then the cleanliness is there. You know what I'm saying? But they're looking at, are they clean this or clean that? Or it's just to see that all aspects are clean. We just never think about that much cleanliness. You know what I'm saying? I know devotees will laugh about washing your mouth, you know, 12 times after you eat, but they'll brush their teeth after they eat. Which is, takes a lot more time, a lot more effort, a lot more facility. But they'll do that because, you know, that's what the dentist said. But the Vedas say, you know, rinse your mouth 12 times. They think that's over the top. That's achwa. It means gargling. Gargling is 3 times, rinsing is 12. Or you can just do it 16 times, so you don't have to worry about making a difference between the two of the counting. So you don't have to go 1, 2, 3, and then 12. You just do 16. You know, in that you gargle and you... Then your teeth are clean, you know. Or we joke about that, but then we spend time with the dentist. You know what I'm saying? That takes time. Right? You know what I'm saying? So we're saying these things, but it's not so much a... It's just a matter of being used to something. You know what I'm saying? How much trouble is it to drive a car? It's a lot of trouble. You know? And then, you know, then on top of it being so much trouble to drive a car, other people are driving cars. You know what I'm saying? If it's just you on the road, it wouldn't be so bad. You know? Like that, but there's others driving on the road, and so all that is so much, you know. And then you know, to how many things you have to do. You have a dotted line, you have a solid line, you have a dot and a solid line. You know, I mean, what are all these things? You know, and then the curb, you have, you know, depending on what country you're in, and they have white lines, yellow lines, red lines, all these different things, and you have to know them all, right? And so. That's a lot more rules than, I mean, nowadays a lot more rules than a lot of times just for simple puja. Simple puja has less things to memorize than that. But somehow know that simple, oh, that doesn't pack to go, I can't remember what. But they know all the rules of driving. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of any body of knowledge, if it's new to you, is always going to be a problem. You know, like learning to cook, you know. You can say, oh, well, we don't. But plenty of people cook. If learning to cook was a bad thing, that actually it's an archaic thing that you cook. But the point is how do you eat? Right? So even if you never cook, someone else is cooking. So the art and science of cooking is still alive and well and extremely important. Even if you just eat things out of a can, still the guy at the factory knew what he was doing, and so they boiled the beans, you know, long enough and then stuck them in the can.
So the mentality would be like laziness and not wanting to.
Yeah, it means laziness is always there, but it's just, it's new, it's different. It's just whatever you're used to. Let's say to go to a party and to, you know, I mean, people are, you always have to say they're at the party and there's all these different people, people you've never met and that, and they're all standing around, they all got their drinks and they're all chatting and all that. It's a whole thing to be able to do that. You know, what you say, what you don't say, how you make an opening to something, what you talk about, you know, like this and that. And, you know, I mean, it's a whole thing. You know, so some people don't like to go to parties. It's just, you know, to get into that. But other people, it's fine. So it's just a matter of whatever you're used to that you do. You know what I'm saying? So the Vedic concept is only those things that are connected with your values. That's what you get involved in. You don't get involved in anything else. So one is not being asked to do that. It's just the upgrading what one is doing.
That's what Prabhupada recommends, training to start at an early age.
Yeah, training starts at an early age, and that's what Brahmacharya is for. Brahmacharya is supposed to learn all those things, not just how to flog books. You know what I'm saying? Because most temples don't teach you how to distribute transcendental knowledge. They teach you how to sell a book. You know what I'm saying? So it means that money is gained and all that, but at the same time, there's a difference between a donation and a sale. You know what I'm saying? And so you could be looking at it from the point that I start talking, they're not interested. I keep adjusting the talking until I find what they are interested in. Having made them interested, then they buy the book. Right? Or it could be, I'm preaching, they're not interested. I make adjustments in what I'm preaching about until they're interested. Then they give a donation for the book. The mechanics are exactly the same. What you're saying may be exactly the same. But there's a difference on whether it's a brahminical activity, a kshatriya, vaishya, or shudra. As far as occupation, it's supposed to be book distribution as a transcendental activity, so that means it's brahminical. Does that make sense? So the thing is then you learn all the things of, like we've been going through in the evening, you know, cleanliness, respective authorities, and this and that. So is respective authorities taught nowadays, or are the new bhaktas are just sitting around talking about the GBC and making judgments? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, so who's teaching then to be brahmacharya? So there's no training. So then, therefore, in grihastha life, then it'll seem very difficult. But if you've already been trained as a brahmachari, then what's the difficulty? You know what I'm saying? Grihastha life, the rules and regulations aren't the difficulty. That's the easy part. You know, a man and a woman, you know, cooperating together and living together, that's the hard part. You understand? You know, that you got to rinse your mouth 12 times. What, you know, what would you rather have? Rinsing your mouth out 12 times or having the other person, you know, going ballistic on you? which is more difficult? Yeah, so therefore, the rules aren't the hard part. Yeah. So that's the easy stuff. And then to learn to be human, that's the difficult. You know, so we're not advocating that, you know, all the rules in that. We're just saying is that the Vedic lifestyle is how to whatever is your values and therefore identity and activities through this process of understanding and practice, you can see Krishna and all of that. That's the Vedic lifestyle. Right? So there's certain basic common principles. But other than that, it's different. Like the Vaishya seeing Krishna in his business and all that, somebody else who doesn't do business will never see Krishna in that way. You know, he'll see it through his art or something. But the point is, you know, and the businessman may never see it that way. You know what I'm saying? You know, so like that. It's a science, but you have to understand what it is. Then it becomes very easy, right? But the point is not to it's not by increasing rules you increase Krishna consciousness. No, it's by increasing Krishna consciousness you increase Krishna consciousness. The rules are only there to see that there's, you know, a basic minimum is followed, is practiced. So it's just due to not really understanding, because it's just seen as because all we generally see is form and activity. As we mentioned, we were discussing on Sundays, we don't really get to the point of being personal. So we talk about it, but the personal things we want to do is, you know, oh, it's so nice being, you know, oh, you know, the karmis are so nice, you know, they're pleasant, they're cultured, you know, they're not so political. You don't have we mentioned any personal qualities up to now? Or personal? No, we've just mentioned the qualities, Krishna's qualities, but on the Brahman platform. You understand? So that's the difficulty, is we only actually see the Brahman platform. And then we see the activity, if we're more organized, and we see the activity that goes with the form. Right? Because the quality, you know, is gained through the form and activity. But we're only operating that system, Sambandhavide and Prayojana, generally on the Brahman platform. You know, then someone who has the kind of, like, you know, traditional things you're supposed to do, the sense of duties and all that, then it comes up to the Paramatma platform. But how many people like that are there? You know what I'm saying? There's plenty of them, but, you know, they're not the ones complaining about rules and regulations. You know what I'm saying? They just do them because as a karmi, they were doing them. Not Vedic, but the Western. There's so many, I mean, if you want to get into it, there's so many Western rules of culture and society, but people don't, you know, your general populace doesn't know about them. You know, it's just, they just don't know. You know, so they just kind of work it out, what's pleasant, what works according to their, you know, their karma. They're a more pleasant person, so they speak more pleasantly. The less pleasant person, then they don't. And so, you know, everyone kind of works it out. You know, there's not necessarily a structure. Does that make sense? You know, so then, you know, kids join gangs because they have a structure. There's a sense of belonging, you know, a sense of duty, sense of authority. Right? You know, there's rules, there's standards. You know what's going on and what you're supposed to do. So they're given a direction because the parents don't. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that the human being needs that. So it's just a matter of you follow the Vedic or follow someone else or make it up. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you walk into the kid's room and they're playing some games or something like, oh yeah, you can't step there. It's like, why not? You know, that's this. You know, it's like, what do you mean? It's the floor. You know, it's right? Is that they're making up their whole things? And so that's it. There has to be. So the idea is that the structure should be connected to Krishna. So if you connect whatever structure you're following to Krishna, great, fine. Right? But if you're not, then the Vedic culture is there to, you know, to give some, you know, how those in the past, how great souls in the past, you know, regulated their life to remember God. That's all. You can figure it out, great. And if not, then the acharyas will give it. So that's why tradition is there. In the footnote. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 3551, the expansions of Vedic wisdom also give the Nityabhadas, the conditioned living entities, a chance to improve. And those who take advantage of such transcendental knowledge gradually regain their lost consciousness of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. Right? So here, they're taking advantage of the transcendental knowledge. Now, if they take also the apara vidya along with it, it just makes material life easier. That's all we're saying. We're not saying that by adding those things, it necessarily is the, it's not the cause of transcendence, right? It's more opportunities to apply transcendence, right? So if you're applying transcendence in your life without any of the, you know, basically the Vedic formulas of lifestyle, still you will be in that way being God conscious. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean that the material structure of your life won't be crazy. Mm-hmm. You follow a material lifestyle, as far as a pattern, it will afford the natural rewards given to someone who follows such a lifestyle. You follow a Vedic lifestyle, it gives those rewards. You follow a non-Vedic lifestyle, you get those rewards. You know what I'm saying? So the difference basically is that it's not that there's not good and bad within the Vedic lifestyle, right? It's just that the Vedic lifestyle is for the bad because you're following rules, then it generates piety. Well, in the non-Vedic, when the bad situations are there, there's a good chance there's not anything pious done. You don't get much benefit from the bad. You know, and from the good, you might also not get much benefit because you're so overly, you know, in other words, you're lamenting on the one and elated in the other. So you're not following any rules that continue, you know, at least improve the quality of the situation. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you can become Krishna conscious, but it just means that the lifestyle, you know, the fruits of it and the experiences remain the same as they were before taking up Krishna consciousness, basically. You know what I'm saying? You add the element that you're vegetarian and, you know, there's no intoxication, gambling, illicit sex. So that improves the environment quite a lot, just that itself. So if you're being Krishna conscious and following the four regulative principles, you know, chanting and do that, just that itself will be dynamic enough that you advance. But it doesn't mean that everything else you're doing won't create problems. You know what I'm saying? It means if you're, let's say you are not Krishna conscious. Okay. If you have a cat in your house, then there's cat hairs all over the house, and it smells like cat pee. Right? That's just the way it is. Now let's say you're Krishna conscious. You chant your rounds, you follow the four regular principles. But if you have a cat in your house, there's still cat hairs all over the house, and the house smells like cat pee. Right? It doesn't change. Right? Now, the Vedic lifestyle is your cat wouldn't live in the house. You might have cats, but they're outside. They live in the barn or someplace else. You feed them, they have their place. Because the rats, you know, hopefully are not in your living room. They're outside. Right? So therefore, there's not that much advantage of the cat being there. So therefore, now that's why your house does not have hairs all over it and doesn't smell like cat pee. You understand?
I do know the boys and have cats in the
Yeah.
Catch the mice.
Yeah, I'm just saying. But the point is you have the cat. Then what goes along with the cat goes, you know, is there. You know, keep dogs in your house, then even more smelly, right? You know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that's the way it works. You know, you wear your shoes outside, and you wear your shoes in the house. Then you know. It's, you know, the same standard of cleanliness on the sidewalk in front of your house as what your living room is. You know, it's just the way it is. Does that make sense? So it's just that doesn't change. Your consciousness may change. You may become more God conscious, but the material experiences you get remain the same. You know, the environments are the same. So the Vedic is to try to improve that by improving the mode of goodness, reducing passion and ignorance, because the mode of goodness, because of the element of knowledge, right? Purity and knowledge is more uplifting than the others. So therefore, to situate yourself in goodness is better than to be in passion and ignorance. But still, goodness isn't good enough. It's just that you're trying to get to pure goodness. So to go from goodness, pure goodness, that's easier than going passion, ignorance, pure goodness, passion, ignorance, pure goodness. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Because goodness means it's situation is good, but it's not being seen in connection to the Lord. You know, you add that, then it's there. You know, so that's the difference. So you're in that environment. Sometimes you're nicely Krishna conscious, so you're pure goodness, and then sometimes you're not. You drop back to goodness. So the situation doesn't really change. It's just the consciousness is the only thing that's adjusting. So your lifestyle stays the same. You know what I'm saying? But you know, you go to the temple. You know, it's there, put goodness in that, and then you go home, and then it's like just like any old Western lifestyle. And then it's quite dynamic, the difference. You know? So if you like living two lifestyles at once, then hey, why not? You know, but if you prefer something being a little bit more consistent, then, you know, why not? Yes.
Could we say that all the different other cultures in the world are actually different manifestations of the lack of culture?
Different manifestations of the lack of culture. You could say, but what works in each culture
will be the same as the Vedic.
It will be the same as the Vedic.
And where they disagree, they will fail.
Yes. It always will. It may get an immediate result, but it'll fail in the long term. You know, it's just like, you know, it's like I'm. Say I'll do something and not do it, and I'll get an advantage from that. But it just means in the long run, then there'll be a problem because no one will trust you. So it means what works is because, like, let's say, even take like the Mughals, right? You know, Genghis G and company, right? They're riding around their horses and they have their little yurts, right? And they live out in the middle of nowhere. And but he was successful because he established authority. Mm. He established law. He established loyalty. You know, he established within their context, you know, honesty, straightforwardness. So all good qualities of the Vedic culture recommends. But it's just, you know, it was because of the people who was dealing. Guys that sit around and ride on horses all day, that's all they do. So then, how do you say? You know, you had to be a little bit more less subtle with them. You know? Like that. So it was quite strong. You know, a guest comes and you don't take care of him, death. You know, if you know, you give him and doing a duty and you don't for some other pretend, death. It was one simple solution. You had a set of rules, you follow them, you're fine. You don't follow them, you'll be killed. That's simple. And so, but everybody liked the form of it and the authority, and so then he generated at the time, I think, the biggest, largest empire in the world. You know? And they were not many rules. There was about 6 or 8 rules like that. You know, then they had their little social customs, you know, like that. Little things like that.
If I don't think you can have it now?
Hmm? Yeah. Well, I mean, you had all those before. You look at the Old Testament; and it's pretty straightforward. You know, you do so many things, and you get killed. You know? At best, you have to walk, you know, outside the village. I forget how much distance. There's a certain distance you have to walk behind everybody else. So the point is that it's structure, it's authority. That's the principle that is working in their culture. That's actually from the Vedic. But they're not necessarily doing it in a standard way. But because they're following the principle, it's working to in their context. Does that make sense? But there may be other aspects that don't work so good. You know what I'm saying? But it works for one thing. You know, the Spartans, you know, the baby's a little sickly, then, you know, he gets tossed in the river. And if he's, you know, got a six-pack already, then, you know, he's one of the boys, you know. But then, you know, 300 Spartans can, you know, fend off, you know, hundreds of thousands of Persians, who were the biggest empire at the time. because you know it's just so it has one side, but you know it's there's other sides that are weaker. You know, is that my sense? So, like that is that. So the Vedic concept is how to accommodate all those strengths and make up for all the weaknesses. In other words, where somebody's strong, that's where somebody else is weak. So it balances. So that's why there's duties. The one that has that strong element then takes, like the Kshatriya, he can provide protection. So he provides protection because everybody else would be weaker. So then that's a benefit for everybody else. So everybody else is so busy in their, you know, emotional or practical things, then knowledge is not. So then the Brahmins have that, so they're taking it. But because the knowledge are always absorbing that, then they don't have money. So therefore then they're doing that. And the artist is always absorbing his art, which he does valuable stuff, but then someone has to take care of it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, his art is only happening when there's patronage. You know, so we see, because that's the Vedic thing, is artists are taken care of. Therefore, that's why the Vedic culture, so much art. But in the Western culture, you know, means you see that the only time art flourished is when somebody would pay for it and they didn't have to worry about it. You know, so it's not like Michelangelo had to walk out every day and wonder, well, where am I going to sleep tonight? And no, he had a place to stay, he had food, he had facility. You know, it's therefore he could pay. Does that make sense? So that's how you deal with Shudras. Shudras are always given facility. Then they can do their art very nicely. Does that make sense? So because they're falling closer, then that's why now we have the Renaissance. All it was is that Renaissance was coming a little bit closer to the Vedic standard of culture and knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Got a little weak on the burning at the stake issues, but you know, like that. Or...
Fortunately, that's what everybody remembers.
Yeah, basically. So, because in the Vedic, then the science, the arts, the transcendence, you know, the practical, the economics, they're all one topic. So there's not a problem in all of them. You can be as scientific as you like, and it's not non-Vedic. It only becomes non-Vedic when you leave God out of the process, because God is what makes that science work. Right? Because the science of sciences is Vedanta. Right? So that we only have a problem with that. We don't have a problem with science. We just have a problem. God's left out. Or art. You know, the point is art. God's the aesthetics. God's the expression. God's the all those things. The economics. He is the power. So if you leave him out of it, it's a problem. You don't leave him out of it. So it's just how to not leave God out of your occupation and lifestyle. Does that make sense? Okay. The expansions of Vedic wisdom also give the Nityabhadas, the conditioned living entities, a chance to improve, and those who take advantage of such transcendental knowledge gradually regain their lost consciousness of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. The expansions of Vedic wisdom, right? So expansions means all the aparavidya. Right? Does that make sense? Or it can also mean you have Bhagavatam and then all the different books that are in support of Bhagavatam. Or you can take transcendental literature and all those who are in support of that. The demigods are amongst the conditioned souls who have developed this pure consciousness of service to the Lord, but who at the same time continue to desire to lord it over the material energy. So it's mixed devotion and service. Right? They're devotees and they accept the Lord's authority, but they still want to enjoy themselves at the same time. Such mixed consciousness puts a conditioned soul in a position to manage the affairs of this creation. Did you catch the subtlety there? Mm-hmm. Right? Such mixed consciousness puts a conditioned soul in the position of... So in other words, you have that mentality, you'll end up as a demigod. Mm-hmm. Right? Then you don't have to make excuses anymore. Just being practical, I would just imagine the universe. The demigods are entrusted leaders of the conditioned souls, right? Because they are devotees. Right? As some of the old prisoners in government jails are entrusted with some responsible work of prison management. Here's the twist again. You know, you put it in and now it looks like, oh yeah, that yeah, just like the dress older prisoners are put in charge of the young guys. So the demigods are improved conditioned souls acting as representatives of the Lord in the material creation, just as the improved prisoners are acting as representatives of the prison warden. You know? Or in this case, then the rules that the government gives. Such demigods are devotees of the Lord in the material world. And when completely free from all material desire to lord it over the material energy, they become pure devotees and have no desire but to serve the Lord. Right? So that show they're mixed devotees. They're not pure devotees. Pure devotees don't end up as demigods.
But how do they have the chance to become pure devotees? They're in heaven. They have to come back.
You can be God conscious in heaven.
Pure, not mixed.
No, but you perform mixed for some time and you start getting the knowledge and detachment.
So is it because we always heard that this is the place that you...
This is the place. It's just like, which would you consider the best place to develop the appreciation of the affection of loved ones? In your living room or... You know, at let's say out in a trench somewhere where there are mortars and machine guns and all that. You understand? Yeah. So you have your ideal place because this is where it all came back. The other one, though, people do start to appreciate their family. You know, they hadn't talked to their father for 10 years, but somehow they're out there, your father's not so bad. You know, he just doesn't talk to you. This other guy wants to blow your head off. You know, so. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that you could, but there's so much enjoyment there, people, they generally don't. So what is the standard definition we give of sura, meaning demigod?
When there's problems.
When there's problems, then they remember God. Yeah. So Indra's there, he's enjoying himself, and then somebody comes over, leans over, and whispers in his ear that Bobby Myers is coming with his unlimited forces, and they've just marched into the heavenly planets. Then you start thinking about God. You know, Urvasi is there, they're all there, but no, you start thinking about God. You know what I'm saying? The demons, when a problem comes up, they don't think about God, they just think of a new plan. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so you know, when you're sitting there and you know the bus is there and it's halfway off the road, and, the gold is right in the middle of the bus, and when you lean this way, it slides that way, but then you go back this way, it slides this way, and nobody knows what to do because you can't move, and then the guy goes, I got an idea, and then the movie ends. So is that sura or asura? Yeah, so that's the thing. So that was popular. Yes.
It seems that according to these descriptions, many devotees are going to end up in heaven by the end of their lives, isn't it?
I will say, I would take the stance that you said it, I didn't.
But you're not.
But we want to thank you for bringing out this very salient point. I think Prabhupada made that point. I don't know if he gave a percentage. He says, you know, most of his disciples will go to the heavenly planets. By the, you know, their consciousness and how they were behaving. Not that everybody can't change that, but it's just by, you know, because the worry is about your facilities and your this and your that and so many other things. And, you know, Krishna consciousness doesn't get in the way; it doesn't cramp your style, you know, stuff like that. You know,
so. Is this a myth? So then it's a myth. Whenever we hear that one devotee died, he left his body, devotees always say, no, he went to his Guru Maharaj, he went to Prabhupada, he went to...
There's that aspect, but Prabhupada would give slightly different. He said, if you remember Krishna,
how could you?
Then he went back to God, and if he didn't, then he'll, you know, depending upon that, he'll hit this or that. He probably would just mention, depends on his consciousness.
The devotees say, if you put Ganga water, tulsi leaf, you read him, chant Maha Mantra, and then they take it as the...
Absolute statement.
Yeah,
but...
As the proof.
But at the same time, it's good. At least then there's some faith that way.
So hope.
Yeah. Yeah. So at least then they have faith in Tulsi and Ganga water and Kirtan and reading Bhagavatam. And so then at least they'll continue that. Because if they didn't think, then it's, hey. You know.
That means don't have separate mind.
Basically. You know, but here, this is third canto. This means that, you know, we just now got into fourth, right? Yeah, so it means like last year or something like that, this purport came up. You know? Like that. So, you know, but do we catch it? You know, so it's here because this is the reality. Therefore, any living entity who desires a position in the material world may desire so in the service of the Lord, and may seek power and intelligence from the Lord, as exemplified by the demigods in this particular verse. Now he's saying is, like the demigods get their power and authority from the Lord, then one could, if one wants to lord it over here, one could do that right here. Now, in other words, that potency is the Lord's potency. So if you want that, still it's the Lord you turn to. Right? So you can get that here. But as we see, is because of that mix, you know, then sometimes the demigods are very happy and sometimes they're not happy at all. Like you can't really say that Indra is in ecstasy, you know, hiding out inside a lotus stem underneath the water, you know, in Manasarovar, you know, and there's this old lady, you know, coughing blood, running around, calling his name, you know. Oh, like that. I don't think he's in over ecstasy. You know, like that. One cannot do anything unless he is enlightened and empowered by the Lord. So these are the knowledge and the potency, authority comes from the Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Mata smritir jnanam apohanam cha. All recollections, knowledge, etc., as well as all forgetfulness, are engineered by the Lord, who is sitting within the heart of everyone. The intelligent man seeks the help of the Lord, and the Lord helps the sincere devotees engage in his multifarious services. So, the devotee could do that and go through that stage in this lifetime and not have to end up as a demigod. Because he's engaging, he's turning to the Lord, and he's becoming purified, and so then he moves on, because things aren't that great. You know, comparatively speaking, we may say, but they're not actually that great. So in other words, this is how the universe works. We're not overemphasized, but the formula works the same. Right? The formula works the same, yes.
But also I'm thinking in the back of my mind that the glories of devotional service are so great that even the lowest people, you know, from the position they are in, then they can go to the heavenly planets.
On that side also. I mean, you know, somebody who, you know, in other ages wouldn't even get an opportunity can become. But the point is since we're offering pure devotional service, then, you know, even that's not that great. You know what I'm saying? You know, it'd be like, okay, the guy's a homeless person on the street, and we're giving him a chance to, you know, live the rest of his life in, you know, the penthouse suite in some 5-star hotel, right? But what we're actually offering is he could actually be, you know, have the facility of, you know, what would the emperor of the world be like? Facility he'd have. So it's nice, but it's not as much as what's actually being offered. So, you know, the eternal, going back to Godhead, that, you know, gives all the facilities that heavenly planets would, plus much greater, and eternally. You know, while the heavenly planets is still quite temporary. You know, you look at it, because it's, even you become one of the main demigods, it's still, they change 14 times in a day of Brahma. Right? So it's there's like some like 500 540,000 changes or manas in a lifetime of Brahma. And that's 3/4 of a second to the spiritual world. Right? So you're taking 1/500,000th of 3/4 of a second, and that's what you're getting by going to the heavenly planets. It's not a long time.
See, it depends from which side you look at.
Yeah, yeah, that's just from which side you look at. From this side, it looks not so bad, but if you look at it from the other side, it's even a blink of an eye is longer than that, because that's just 1/11th of a second. Here we're talking about, a 500,000th of 3/4 of a second. So it's not a whole. Madhu Mangal's lunch would not have even got to the next boy yet by flying into space. And Brahma has changed. One boy takes it, steals it, and throws it in the air. It's in the air longer. You probably get through 2 lifetimes of Brahma before it actually, gets to the next boy. so it's not actually that glorious when you analyze it.
Time is an interesting thing. When you realize that it's a relative term.
Yeah. But it's fixed here. Mm. It moves on. While there it adjusts according to the mood.
Yeah.
Yeah. By going quicker, then that will enhance the pastime. It does, by going slower, it enhances the pastime. And do that. Like the gopis dance for Night of Brahma.
Mm.
Like that, but it didn't seem like that long.
Mm.
But their perception is still at 1 night. Their perception is.
Yeah, but it's still there was that time, because you had the thing of just the conscious being that long at that level, the experience of being that long at that level, but at the same time as, when you're having fun, time goes quite quickly.
So what's the function of the time in the spiritual world?
Only
they enhance the
pastime? Yeah, it's just to enhance. Everything's just to enhance the pastime. Right? But here it's just to regulate our existence, create a situation. Because our existence here then is based on time and space. Like that. But their time and space are serving the pastimes. But here, time and space are just. Everything moves along, and that's, you can't change anything. You're limited here. There, you're not limited. Mm. One cannot do anything unless he is enlightened and empowered by the Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 15:50, Mata Smriti Gyan Upavana Cha, all recollections, knowledge, etc., as well as all forgetfulness, are engineered by the Lord, who is sitting within the heart of everyone. The intelligent man seeks the help of the Lord, and the Lord helps the sincere devotees engage in his multifarious service. So we should seek the Lord's service. So that's the point being made here, is that the demigods, because they seek the Lord's help. Right? There's that Shukterya Neva Nigrama Pratitaistubhanti. The demigods, they get their power and everything from the Lord. They offer their prayers, their respects, everything. So they're always, whenever you see the Lord comes, they also come. They're also around. So they get their, what do you call it? Enlightenment and empowerment from the Lord. Right? So that's the point being made. Not whether anybody, who's going to the heavenly planets and who's not. That's a secondary point. That's just to watch out, is that one should avoid going to the heavenly planets. But if you have those kind of desires, you can take care of them here before going, so you don't have to go to the heavenly planets. But the principle is that is based on that surrender to the Lord, that sincerity in surrendering to the Lord. So, work? Yeah? Okay. Lesson 8. Sri Krishna in his personal feature and eternally enjoys in the transcendental realm. Right? So that was dealing with Brahman and Paramatma. Now it says Bhagavan. Okay, 15:16. That supreme abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. In the spiritual world, one enjoys eternal bliss, eternal life, and full knowledge. As long as a living entity is in this dark material world, he is in conditional life. But as soon as he reaches the spiritual sky by cutting through the false, perverted tree of this material world, he becomes liberated. Then there is no chance of his coming back here. In his conditional life, the living entity considers himself to be the lord of this material world. But in his liberated state, he enters into the spiritual kingdom and becomes an associate of the Supreme Lord. There he enjoys eternal bliss, eternal life, and full knowledge. So now we're bringing out, because now it's Bhagavan, so the Prayojana aspect. Mm-hmm. Right? And Brahman and Paramatma, then we're seeing the situations and the activities. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. But then the result of that is then being with the Lord. One can attain the spiritual world only by surrender. The words Paramatma are very important here. Actually, every nook and corner is the property of the Supreme Lord. But the spiritual world is Param. So even the homeless, you know, person who's living behind, you know, one of those big metal, you know, how you say, garbage can things that the trucks come along and empty now and again. Still, that spot belongs to the Lord. It's still by God's grace that you have that corner. Because there could be other homeless persons living there, and there'd be no place for you. Right? So it's by God's grace that you have that spot. Right? So still, you have to see it in connection with the Lord. But the spiritual world is Param, full of six opulences. Right? Does that mean they have better garbage cans? Their alleys are not dark and dingy and dirty.
Can you say that he got this spot by God's grace, but he got there by his own fault?
Yeah, you could say that. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's some fortune that he has that spot, but it's a misfortune that, you know, he's homeless and he's in that place. You know, unless, of course, then you find out that he was out there and then, you know, because 2 weeks ago that something happened in the house, so he ended up out, and then now, you know, people came in and raided his house, and, you know, so all kinds of things happened there, so then you could say he was fortunate because he was, you know, so everything in the material world is always mixed. Nothing's purely good or purely bad. You know, there's always, you know, a mix. So that's the idea, is we're trying to get to the stage of actual purity. But that can only be obtained on the transcendental platform. You can't attain actual good, you know. Mm. I mean, only a few have obtained pure bad. you know, Hiranyakashipu, that's evil, you know. You know, but even he was, you know, followed the rules of his culture, yeah. And, you know, yeah. Aristocratic. Yeah. So, I don't know what you call, you know, bad or bad. You know. Maybe a badger out in the desert.
Badger.
The place is not very nice, and plus you're really nasty.
That's actually pretty nasty. Wonder if that's how it got its name.
Maybe an Ebola virus, you know.
It's very few friends.
Yeah, your friends don't last very long. Right? The Katha Upanishad 2.2.15 also confirms that in the spiritual world there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, or stars. Na tatra suryo bhati na chandratarakam. For the whole spiritual sky is illuminated by the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. That supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and by no other means. So in other words, there's the feeling of day and night or light and dark and all that, but it's not that it's dark meaning there's no light. Mm. You know, it's all transcendental illumination. So these are also just the elements of the pastime. You know, you never hear about the gopis that's so dark they can't see and they're falling over themselves and tripping.
What's illuminating the spiritual sky?
They have a sun and a moon and stars.
They're not dependent on them?
No, they're spiritual sun, spiritual moon, spiritual stars.
Once I was leaving someone's house and I said, oh, don't you want to leave the light on for the deity? And they said, no, the Lord is...
You don't need to feed him either or clothe him. He's got hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis. In fact, he doesn't even need to be in your house.
Better to suggest when they are in the house, they don't switch to
that. Yeah, but since the Lord's living there, it's a transcendental realm, so they never have to turn their lights on. Yeah. Plus, think of all the electricity they'd save.
Okay.
Yeah? The Lord's within the heart, so communication is great, so no need of any routers, no emails, you know, no internet. He knows everything, so you don't need Google, you know. So it's like, you know, it's like, they make life so much easier. Try it. It's always funny how they have all these little
concoctions.
Sometimes you get tinkle, tinkle, little star. Okay. That supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and by no other means, right? So, these other information is given and as example. Right? Or, yeah, as an example, either, yeah, always as an example. But it's not that information that's the important element. The important element is this you achieve by surrender, you know, in this case. Or, you know, the Lord is independent, or the Lord has pervaded everything. Or, you know, so many examples will be given.
Mm-hmm.
Like that? So that means, from that, those examples can carry that aspect of God consciousness. So that means all these various things described in the scriptures, they can all carry God consciousness.
Mm.
Right? Because any one of those aspects can be used in his example. Does that make sense? Yeah. So these examples are useful. You can apply them in your life, you know, and they're useful for understanding.
Mm.
So footnote 12. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.52, there are four processes for human society, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. And they culminate in liberation. Human society must follow a process of religion to advance. And on the basis of religion, one should try to develop his economic condition so that he can fulfill his needs for sense gratification according to the rules, religious rules and regulations. Then liberation from material bondage will be easier to obtain. That is the Vedic process. When one is above the stages of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, one becomes a devotee. He is then on the platform from which he is guaranteed not to fall again into the material existence. Yadgyatva nanivartante, 15.6. So here's, when one is above the stages, that doesn't mean that dharma, artha, kama, and moksha aren't being applied, but they're not as stages of advancement. Does that make sense? Because you go dharma, right? You perform your religious activities. So then there's artha. You improve your economic position. With that economic position, you have facilities. So then there's sense gratification. Having fulfilled those desires, then one starts to understand that you can't fulfill the desires, so therefore you are interested in moksha, right? And then you could say from that liberated platform, then you could take an interest in God as the basis of liberation. You know what I'm saying? So, very slow process this. You know, this is what is talked about as the slow path in the Gita, right? But the quick path is dharma means you perform, you engage your nature in Krishna's service. You engage your artha that comes from that in Krishna's service. You engage your senses in Krishna's service. And you engage the position of transcendence in Krishna's service.
Mm.
Right? So when we say transcend, it doesn't mean we don't use it. It just means that you're not doing it on the platform that others are doing it. That will, dharma will take them to artha. No, it's by performing dharma, we'll develop devotional service. By artha, we'll develop devotional service. By kama or moksha, devotional service. Does that make sense? So this is sometimes a mistake made. Oh, so we don't need these. But then the complaint is about the material facilities. Right? There is a complaint about material facilities. According to dharma, artha, moksha, and kama, where do material facilities come from? Dharma. But if you don't, but then they'll say, oh, but then, you know, this is not, you can't do the Vedic stuff in this age. So you're saying is that you're going to be, you know, manda sumanda mateo manda bhagya. You're going to be unfortunate. You don't want to follow it, you'll be unfortunate. That's all. You follow it, you'll be fortunate. You don't follow it, you'll be unfortunate. Hey, you know, it's just the way it goes. You know, you want material facilities, you have to follow dharma. You don't want to follow dharma, hey, don't worry that you don't have any material facilities. It's
in general, people are following dharma maybe even more than they realize.
They are. Yeah. They don't actually understand what dharma means. Mm. You know, just like we were saying, is that we'll say that you know the other day, I think, you know, that the men, not men, women are, no, but they still think in everything the same. It's just not in a pure state.
Mm.
You know, but if you look at it now, let's say we read about in the Mahabharata about a stork. Okay? And then we read about the storks in the Iliad or the Odyssey. Right? And then we read about the stork in Chaucer's tales, or we read about the stork, you know, in so many other things. Right? And then we look at a stork today. Anything changed? No, stork still does his, you know, and it's Kali Yuga. How is it a stork can follow his dharma? It's Kali Yuga, doesn't he know? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, building it on the, you know, the top of, I mean, they still build on the top of your barn and all that, or on the top of a tree where, you know, it's been broken off by hit by lightning, something like that. Now they build them on the top of, you know, telephone poles. But still, the principle of building your house on top of something, you know, that's what the stork's going to do. Yeah, you know, that's all.
Stand on one leg.
Yes, stand on one leg. Deliver babies, you know, all these different things, you know. It just doesn't change. You know, it's always the same, right? Right?
Yeah.
Babies are still being born, so that means storks are doing their duties. Mm. Yeah, it's going on. As advised in Bhagavad Gita, if one transcends these four processes and is actually liberated, one engages in devotional service. Right? He is guaranteed not to fall into material existence again. Right? If he transcends these four processes and is actually liberated, it means there's nothing to gain from the material world. So he actually rises above fruitive activities or sense gratification or the need to free himself. You know, so in other words, moksha mentioned there is not actual liberation, because there's some material need is there. So that means if there's a material need, there's a material identity. So therefore, the endeavor is still material. Right? Because saying that I'm Brahman, but I as Brahman am exactly the same as the Supreme Brahman, and nobody has any qualities, that's a material concept. It's not spiritual at all, a definition. So if you have a mundane definition and a mundane goal, so what's the activity going to be?
Mundane.
Mundane, yeah. So it's moksha, but it's not real moksha, actual moksha. So actual moksha is that you have no need to gain from any activity, dharma, artha, karma, moksha, except Krishna's pleasure.
So that's
then
great.
It's devotional service.
So that's great. That's the only real moksha.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll say that someone on the platform of bhavas is in a liberated state, but then we'll say that becomes real.
But,
that, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the child's born into the rich family, right? So you'll say he's rich. But he's not actually rich until he's older and he's, you know, part of the business and doing things, or he inherits, you know, the, you know what I'm saying? Then you can say now he's actually, but otherwise he was, you know, rich. Right there. Then he is guaranteed not to fall into material existence again, because you're transcendentally situated, because there's nothing that you want to gain from the material world. When you see the material world, there's no idea for dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. Right? That's not your interest. So then why will you come back again? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. 8:16. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. By devotional service, one can gradually attain the supreme abode. All kinds of yogis, karma, gyan, hatha, etc., eventually have to attain devotional perfection in bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness before they can go to Krishna's transcendental abode and never return. Those who attain the highest material planets, the planets of the demigods, are again subjected to repeated birth and death. As persons on earth are elevated to higher planets, people on higher planets, such as Brahmaloka, Chandraloka, and Indraloka, fall down to earth. Right? You know, you have to make space. You know? So you go up there, and then when you come on, there's somebody, oh, you put too many people on a you know, one of those little rubber rafts or something like that, then the other guys start falling out the other side. You know? Right?
Yeah.
You have to manage it somehow.
Standard procedure.
Yeah. The practice of sacrifice called Panch Agni Vidya, recommended in the Chandogya Upanishad, enables the one to achieve Brahmaloka. But if on Brahmaloka one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. Right? So it is possible to cultivate, just generally people don't. Because the other things are so. So Tapaloka, they're just doing, you know, austerities. You know, Janaloka, they're just doing meditation, like that. Or Mahaloka, maybe Janaloka, then they're Prajapati, right? You know, like that. Brahmaloka, that's yogis. You know, Indraloka, they're just having a good time. You know, so like that, then they'll. But you can't, just like that was the complaint of the demigods about Narad Muni as the Gandharva. They're doing Sankirtan, so they're supposed to be cultivating some God consciousness, but he's just showing off for 15 Gandharva girls, right? Like that, and you know they were quite entertained. So it means he was good. He was good, but. The demigods didn't appreciate the, the endeavor. It fell short of their expectations, right? So then he became cursed to take birth as a son of a maidservant. Right? So in other words, you still have to cultivate God consciousness. And if you do, you could go from there. I think the Madhvas, they go through a whole thing. It takes 14 stages to get to back to Vaikuntha. So you're here, and then you take birth in this planet, then go there. There may be a pancharatric system. So ours is quite unique, that in one lifetime you go back to Godhead.
Like in Minnesota, like 14-step program instead of Minnesota's 12-step program.
Yeah, like that. But the dependency on God is the central principle. Okay. Those who progress in Krishna consciousness on the higher planets are gradually elevated to higher and higher planets. See, this is the difference here. You can perform devotional service, but it's not that you just directly go from there. They gradually hear. But those who progress in Krishna consciousness on the higher planets are gradually elevated to higher and higher planets, and at the time of universal devastation are transferred to the eternal spiritual kingdom. So when you finally make it to Brahmaloka, then from Brahmaloka, then you go back to Godhead. When Brahma, you know, when it's the end of the universe and Brahma goes, then you go. Yeah, yeah, it takes time. So what we're being offered is something very special. And we're thinking it's too much trouble.
Yeah.
You know, it's be like saying, so, okay, you know, you start now when you're 12, you know, put together a little business in your garage and this and that, and then, you know, work at it, and then by the time you're 60, then you'll be a billionaire. You know, and we're saying, oh no, we got this system, you just do this, in 5 minutes you're a billionaire. And we're saying, oh, but it's Kali Yuga, it's so difficult, you know, how are we supposed to do, follow all these rules and all that? So it's just 5 minutes. No, no. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. So does that answer your question? You can do, but it's just gradually till you get to Brahmaloka. But there is the chance that you won't. If on Brahmaloka one does not cultivate Krishna consciousness, then he must return to earth. So even if he cultivated, even got up to there by that process, if he doesn't continue it there, then he may come back down to earth. So the point is, as you cultivate Krishna consciousness, you progress. You don't. It's just simple. You're cooking lunch, it's happening. You stop cooking and go make a phone call, lunch is not happening. It's not like, well, it should have been done in 20 minutes and I made a 20-minute phone call, so when I go back in the kitchen, lunch should be ready. Right? No, it doesn't work like that. You know.
It doesn't mean that pure devotional service cannot elevate them in one life. Pure devotional service.
But if they were doing pure devotional service, why would they be there?
No, they made a mistake, realized it, decided to start it again,
do like this. Realize the mistake now and don't go there. No? Yes, but don't worry. On your way going back to Godhead, you'll get a tour of the universe. You'll be able to see what it looks like. Just don't get attracted. Right? So you get a tour. You know, on the way out. Yeah, yeah. Just keep going, just like that. Oh, okay. Like that, but if you think, wow, that's cool, then they'll drop you off there. So don't make that mistake either. Yeah. No, it's just like that's how they get you. Then they fear. Okay. 8:20-22. Yet there is another unmanifested nature, which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. Right? So that's unmanifested nature. This is unmanifested matter. Right? Because then they'll make the mistake seeing, well, that's unmanifest, so therefore Brahman is unmanifest. No, that's nature. It's unmanifest because it's not created and then destroyed. It's 5 minutes. It was like in a Sunday class. It's 5 minutes before people getting up and walking out. It is supreme and is never annihilated. Right. So it means it's created. No, it's always been there. So it's not manifest, but it's always there.
Is that the pradhan?
No, it means the spiritual world.
Okay.
It's not manifest because it always exists. Here it's manifested and unmanifested. But it's manifest and unmanifest matter. It's not actually real. Because it's not real people and real this, it's dead matter.
Yeah.
Like if I set up the room and make all kinds, like I'll go out and, you know, I was driving along and I noticed at the back of the parking lot that there was, you know, they'd just thrown about 20 mannequins into the dumpster. So I go and load them all up, take them all home, set them all up, dress them up, you know. Somebody's there, you know, calling, somebody's eating a sandwich, you know, somebody's drinking a drink, someone's got the remote, you know, like that. And then I sit around and, you know, hey, honey, how's it going? Yeah, that's a wife and kids, you know. Oh, hey. Yeah, you know, like this, you know. That, you know, it's not real. So it's all dead matter. So it's not actually real. It says manifest and unmanifested matter. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. So now he's making it clear is that when the Shastras, because as you notice, when we're going through the Dharma Shastra, it'll say you'll reach the supreme. Mm. Right? So all the different Shastras use these different terms. So he's saying that which the Vedanta says unmanifest or and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns. All those different definitions. That is my abode.
Yeah.
Right, his supreme abode. The supreme personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading and everything is situated within him. So he's there, as Bhagavan, but at the same time, he is all-pervading and everything situated in him. Right? Yes.
And why does he change? First he refers to my supreme abode, but then in the last few sentences he says, he is present, he is all-pervading. Like, what is there some grammatic reason why the change?
Because he's, you know, I guess he's recommending to Arjuna as a friend, you know, so. It's just. You know, it's just like you go, someone's house, they say, you know, yeah, don't try this that I made. He says, you know, try the house special, which means he made it. You know. This is, you know, it's just a cultured way. In Goloka Vrindavan, all desires are fulfilled. The supreme abode of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described in the Brahma Samhita as Chintamani Dham, a place where all desires are fulfilled. The supreme abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are also trees called desire trees that supply any type of edible upon demand. And there are cows known as Sarabi cows, which supply a limitless supply of milk. In this abode, the Lord is served by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune, Lakshmi, and he is called Govinda, the primeval Lord and the cause of all causes. Right? So if they wanted to take that there, they don't turn on the lights because of that, but at the same time, as everything is there, so they don't actually have to go out and work or get any facility. They just have to, because it's the Lord's abode, then everything will come just by asking. So it's not that they're not getting it, then they should just try to be more sincere. So they should give up all other material concepts and just focus on that. Right? Or they should turn the light on. The Lord is accustomed to blow his flute, Venum Quanantam. His transcendental form is the most attractive in all the worlds. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like the color of clouds. He is so attractive that his beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. So cupid here means that attraction, just that unencumbered attraction between male and female, like this. That's Cupid. So we see how powerful that is. Mm. You know, how you say, empires are won and lost. You know, I mean, you know, people do all kinds of things for that. Books are written, this and that. Everything's happening on that. So he's more attractive than thousands of that. So you take that and multiply thousands, and he's more attractive than that. So,
good looking.
He's good. Yeah, he's good. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around his neck, and a peacock feather in his hair. Right? Just for the benefit of the academics here. Notice here he just said saffron cloth. He didn't say the word dhoti. Right?
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Mm.
So that is how the academics come up with the word dhoti is not used. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just like if I said the Hell's Angel. He had on his colors.
Yeah.
I didn't say leather jacket with big, huge, monstrous, you know, embroidered, you know, patch on his back.
Nevertheless.
I just said colors. You know? You know, or, you know, you had the guy, he was wearing his threads. You know, did I say, you know, jeans half falling off, a very large dog chain, and, you know, all those different things like that, hat on, crooked. No, I didn't say any of that. I just said threads. So that's the level of intelligence that our esteemed academics are working at when it says here, he wears saffron cloth. Oh, it didn't say dhoti. Yeah.
When it says he wears the saffron cloth, is that to signify that he's not attached? Or doesn't it have that kind of significance?
No, it means yellow has some red in it, so it's just more yellow. It's not, it's you know, so it's not necessarily, in other words, it's not canary yellow. You know, there's some red in it. It's just like the gopis, it says they're golden colored, but it's golden with a touch of kumkum, so there's a touch of red in it. A garland around his neck and a peacock feather in his hair. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of his personal abode. So this is just a small hint. Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. Right? Supermost. Right? They're all super. Yeah. This is supermost. A vivid description is given in the Brahma Samhita. Vedic literatures like Katha Upanishad 1.3.11 state that there is nothing superior to the abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that that abode is the ultimate destination. Purushan na param kinchit sa kashta parama gati. When one attains to it, he never returns to the material world. Right? Because you're above the needs of the material world. Right? You only go to a place because you need something there. If you have no need, you won't go there. Right. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna himself are non-different, being of the same quality. Okay. So, end there.
So. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Chaitanya.